When the whole family comes together to watch the game, nobody wants to miss a second of the action to run to the grocery store. With Instacart, you can get all your weekly groceries in as fast as an hour. Less time shopping means more game time. Let's go. Visit instacart.com to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. $10 minimum per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour number four of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. What an anticlimactic game seven. Hickey, right? Like, we probably should have been deserving of a great back and forth game. But really, what should have been the way you feel about a game seven happened in game six. And it's tough to go back to back all time classic games, but we were on the verge of having an all-time classic type of series, which I would have never have thought would have been the case when it was 3-0 Miami. And even when Boston got one, it was momentum really doesn't move until you kind of see them go to game six and then drop game six. And 3-1 then became 3-2. And then 3-2 in Miami on Saturday night, that is when momentum, we thought, shifted. Because when you had that tip and go in by Derek White, everyone thought it in America. If you didn't even think it then on Monday, that's different. But in the moment on that Saturday night, every single person, if they're being honest with you, thought that the Boston Celtics were just destined to win this series. And then come Monday night, it was an absolute ass-kicking by the Miami Heat. And it wasn't like you look at Miami and their performance meant that the game should have been a blowout. Caleb Martin was the reason why they won that game, why they're off to the NBA Finals, and their defense was sensational. But the Boston Celtics, to me, and I'm not taking anything away from Miami, but they're the bigger takeaway from today. When you go off that emotional high of a game six, where you win to save your season, and then you lose game seven, not even lose game seven, but a non-competitive, it's mystifying to me. And I know everyone's going to tell me, oh, but that's what Boston's been all throughout the season. Fine. You could tell me that. Now, Boston has lacked a killer instinct, even regardless of what the record is, all throughout the season. And in the playoffs, early on against the Hawks, series should have never been six games. They should have never been down 3-2 to the Sixers. Right, they lose that game one when Embiid doesn't play. Harden goes off. And then in that third series, how they were down 3-0 just to begin with is mind-boggling. But they still had a chance to win the series. And the moment when Tatum had his ankle rolled right early on in Game 7, it's almost as if all of Boston at the TD Garden just exhaled and was like, uh-oh, it's just not meant to be. Which is crazy because Boston, they have the more talented team. You have Jason Tatum, who's a stud. If he gets hurt, I'm not saying that's easy to overcome, but he still played even though he was a decoy. Jaylen Brown's got to go show you why he was an All-NBA second-team player this year. And he was just abysmal in the contest last night. Hickey, I know you put up this front on Twitter last night where you tweet out before the game, Boston's going to lose, Miami's going to win. And I expect you to echo that sentiment because you picked the Heat before the series in six games. So I know you pretty damn well. You don't go and turn against your prediction until you're proven to be wrong. And nine times out of ten, Hickey makes one of these claims, and he ends up being wrong. So I'll give you credit for getting Miami right and winning the series. But even though you put up that front on Monday night, you had to be really worried after Saturday that when Boston wins the game like that, like forget Monday, I'm just talking about from Saturday night, even you had to think in the moment, okay, maybe Boston is going to find a way to make this history.
In the moment, absolutely. It felt like destiny. It's one of those things where we'll be looking back at this 30 years from now.
I'm surprised you just admitted that, by the way.
The game, like the tip-in, I don't know what you know, there's all, you know, every big play in history has some sort of name, the catch, et cetera, the tip, I don't know, but I'm sure it would have had a name sooner rather than later.
I don't know if they would have gone with the tip. But.
Tip in, whatever you want. Ryan, someone with Derek White's name, people are more creative than I am. But it's like that was one of those plays where it felt like Miami had no chance of being in the game. All of a sudden, they're on the free throw line with a chance to basically win the game with 3 seconds left. And you're like, holy cow, they're going to steal this game. They're going to go to the finals. And then you see Marcus Smart chuck up a shot. You're like, oh, that's not going in. This game's over. And then you get that miracle where, at least, I don't know about you, for me, I thought, no, no way, late. I thought, to me, it looked late. And obviously, the replay was perfect timing. But in the moment, it's like, oh, no, he's screaming at counter because he's desperate. He hopes to keep his season alive, but did not think he got off in time. And then you're like, oh, wow, that counted. They just won the game. Like, history felt like it was going to be made after that night.
You're exactly right. The moment when they were like, oh, wait a second, we don't know if that went in or not, I thought for sure it just didn't have enough time because Smart shot the ball and got the ball with only 3 seconds left. Now, they added on way more time than they should have. When you go back and review it, all that, we could get into that conversation. It didn't end up impacting the series because Miami ends up winning game seven. But if the Heat would have lost last night, the Heat fan would have been bitching that there shouldn't even been that much time left. And I still don't understand how they added as much time as they did, going back to that foul that was when Jimmy Butler had the ball and he still had the ball with 3 seconds left, and somehow they upped it all the way to three. But right away, like when you just, for that 10 seconds, had no clue what was going on, at first I thought to myself, no way that went in. But before I saw a replay, and you just see how adamant Derek White was, sure, like part of you goes, oh, every play in that moment's going to try to sell it. But when you go back and watch it, White, who had the best view out of anybody in the house because he has the ball, the buzzer's right in front of him, and he puts it in. When you go back and watch that, he knew. The moment that went in, he knew that that basket was going to be successful. And when it does go in and you find out that it does count, yeah, everyone's thinking that the Boston Celtics are going to win that series. And I put this out there on Twitter. Like, what are some of those great plays in sports that don't get that much credit or are associated with losing? And sure, White hits the shot in the moment, but Derek White, whenever you mention that shot, it's unfortunately going to be, but they ended up losing the series. Like, I talked about the Andy Chavez catch earlier. Yeah, great moment right there, but the Mets ended up losing that game seven with the Yadier Molina home run off Aaron Heilman. You also had some people say the Pujols home run up against Brad Lidge in that game five. And we know the Cardinals ended up losing that series. You also could have talked about, I saw Mraz tweeted me this, the curse catch in the Super Bowl before the Malcolm Butler interception. Like, that's a moment that's forgotten about.
Marcus Page, UNC.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
acrobatic,
a great one.
Shot where it's like, holy cow, tied the game out of nowhere. Double clutch in the air.
I was actually in his Twitter profile picture when that shot happened. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
So I was covering the Final Four that year in Philly. And after the game, I was talking to him in the locker room. And one of those professional cameras got a shot of him. I don't remember if he had the trophy in his hand or not, but he had the net right around his neck. And I was the reporter that was standing right next to him. And he made that his profile picture. And when he hits that shot, everyone's going to his Twitter page. They're like, oh. I was getting so many tweets from my friends and texts from my friends. You're in his profile picture. You're in his profile picture. And then shortly after that, poof, you have Oshefu mopping up the court. You then had, it was Arce Diakono with the pass before Jenkins for the championship. Oh, onions, double sauteed. That's another great one as well. But there's these moments in sports that you always do remember, but sometimes they're associated with losing. And that's Celtics shot by Derek White is always going to be talked about, right? It's going to be one of those, this is a franchise that is the definition of iconic moments. And that's always going to be a moment that's going to be talked about, but then people are going to say, yeah, but they ended up losing the series. Like when you do like pump up kind of videos, that shot will be in there when you're doing pump up videos, but it's always going to be like, ugh, yeah, great shot, but they ended up losing that series. And that no show by the Celtics last night, to me, is the biggest story from Game 7. And the player that's most responsible for that is Jaylen Brown. Because really, you allowed Caleb Martin to go into your own building and beat the Boston Celtics and prevent the Boston Celtics from having this epic comeback. And sure, if you're a Celtics fan, you could sit there, you could bitch and complain about the Jason Tatum injury with him rolling his ankle. But you have a better and a deeper team. And Jaylen Brown, technically this year, was a top 10 player in the sport. And he had 8 turnovers, can't dribble to his left, which has been an issue for a while. And was just absolutely brutal shooting the 3-point shot, and any shot for that matter. And the Celtics live and die by the three. We know that. That's been evident. That's been so well documented this series. And you had guys like Derek White get hot, Marcus Smart get hot in 5 and 6 to allow this comeback. But then in Game 7, no one could hit water even if they fell out of a boat. And Jaylen Brown, you always hear those rumors, does he want to stay in Boston? And he doesn't help himself with the way that he answers this question because he never gives you an answer that makes you fully believe him. And you look at last night, he had an opportunity to show you that he could be a number one on a championship team. And last night he showed you why there's a reason why he's a number two, not a number one. Because with Tatum getting banged up and clearly not being able to be as effective as you would want him to be for a Game 7, you needed Jaylen Brown to elevate the rest of the team. And he couldn't do that. And it's weird now when you talk about the future of Jaylen Brown, because there's only a year left on the contract. And since we've seen the Celtics, since they were so good at such an early age with Tatum and Brown, and they got to all those conference finals. Like, remember in Tatum's rookie year when he threw it down in LeBron James's face in the conference finals in that Game 7? We've seen them in so many moments. These guys are 25 and 26 years old in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, Tatum's not going anywhere. But the question is, does Jaylen Brown get dealt this offseason? And you have to know if Jaylen Brown wants to stay in Boston. If he does, he's eligible for the 5-year, $295 million contract. He's probably going to get that, as crazy of a contract as that is. Is he worth that money? No. But, Hickey, it's kind of like quarterbacks in the NFL. There's a lot of quarterbacks that are really, 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 really good that get paid a lot more than what they're worth. But that's what the market dictates. And this is what the market's going to dictate for Jaylen Brown. The only way he's not going to be in the Boston Celtics next year is if he does not want to be a part of the team. And if he wants to go somewhere else to be that number one. And when you look at the potential destinations, and I've seen all, right, the conversation today on where Jaylen Brown could potentially go, it's really not that many. Like, if you want to call up the Hornets and see if you get the number two pick and you'll get the player after Wembanyama, okay. But really, Portland has two avenues to go. And I think it was Kevin O'Connor who threw this out there. If Portland wants Jaylen Brown, and what do they want to give up to go get Jaylen Brown? Like, if Dame doesn't want to leave Portland, you could give that number three overall pick, and I've seen Anthony Simons has been talked about in a potential trade, or that's been the speculation today. And then you get a younger player and a number three overall pick, so two young players for Jaylen Brown. But if Dame wants to leave, and Dame doesn't want to be a part of working with younger players again, maybe you just do Dame for Jaylen Brown straight up. Maybe you have to add something if you're Portland. But Damian Lillard's a better player than Jaylen Brown, in my opinion. But Dame is older, and Jaylen Brown is significantly younger. So I'll be fascinated to see how the Celtics do approach this offseason. But the guy that really holds the power here is Jaylen Brown. And I want to see if Jaylen Brown wants to be a Boston Celtic. Because, Hickey, if he can't give you that clear answer this offseason, that is your answer. If he does not want to be a Boston Celtic, whether he says that or not, like, if he can't answer that question, do you want to be Boston Celtic? And if he can't say yes, then if you're Boston, you have no other choice with a year left on that deal to then trade him. Even though this team is still very young And there's still a championship window for this team, even though you wake up today and you probably don't feel that's the case with just how underwhelming they were in this postseason.
Well, I think even if he wants to be there, you still have to explore every trade possibility and see if there's one out there that works. Just because at this point, I don't think you can win a championship with Tatum and Brown as your two best players. I know they're still young, but we've gone now down this road a while. They're both inconsistent. I think if you are the Celtics, you can, even if you're not getting a one-for-one match of a star player back, and you can instead get two or three really, really key contributors, and maybe get a better point guard as well,
Other than Marcus Smart. Overrated too.
So it's like one of those things where you can use Jaylen Brown not just for a Dame trade straight up, which still would be very nice for the Celtics, but let's say you get two or three pieces that could add up to basically what he equates to as a top 20 player in the NBA. I think that's a win for Boston.
So
something you gotta pursue.
Would the number 3 overall pick in Simons be enough for you? Is that the deal that you look at? Or do you maybe call up the Warriors? I've seen this has been thrown out there. And you go get Wiggins and you get Poole, and then maybe Kuminga gets thrown into that deal as well.
I'm still wary from the Celtics of Poole because he's another guy that's kind of all or nothing. So at that point, I'd rather personally just keep Jaylen Brown than go down the Jordan Poole route, because at least while it's digressed a little bit regressed,
it's only Portland.
Plays defense.
That's really the only destination. Either do the trade for Dame or you do the trade for Anthony Simons and the number 3
overall pick.
We call
the Hornets maybe LaMelo Ball. I think that's an interesting one that's out there. If they want to give him up and go draft a point guard themselves and kind of start over
fresh. I'd be surprised if the Hornets are ready to do that.
Well, right there, if you get Scoot Henderson, that's a guy that, you're not going to have two point guards on the same team.
Why not? In NBA, maybe you just find a way to work it out in the backcourt.
If you're the Celtics, that's a trade opportunity I would look. But again, also too, we've seen some surprising trades where you don't think a guy's available, you make one call, a guy of Jaylen Brown's caliber, still a well-respected player in the NBA, is around. All of a sudden that could make some other guys more accessible than we thought. I think if you're Boston, you have to at least ask around. It's one, if the no trade comes back, okay, fine. You bring him back, what are you going to do? I think you got to, whether Brown wants to, even if he says he wants to be there, still explore all trades.
And this is going to sound soft, but it's a reality of the situation. If he was miffed about the team potentially looking to trade him for Kevin Durant, how is he going to handle that when it's not looking for a player like Kevin
Durant? Play better. If you're the Celtics, play better. Don't give us a reason to put you on the trade block. Game 7 was your chance to secure your spot here, and you failed. That's what I tell him. Sorry.
And you could say that, and that's you speaking from a fan. That's not how the NBA operates. The NBA just pats these players on the ass all the time. It's very simple. This conversation is going to go one or two ways. Jaylen, do you want to be here? If he says yes, you get the deal done. Jaylen, do you want to be here? If he gives you an ambiguous answer or no, then you got to trade him. It's that simple. Ultimately, I do think he'll stay in Boston, and I do think they're going to give him this ridiculous contract. But if he gets traded, I think it's Portland. Out of all the deals he's seen rumored so far, I think it will either be the number 3 pick in Anthony Simons or Dame for Brown, and however else you want to figure out the rest of the specifics of that deal as well. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Where is DeAndre Hopkins going to land next? We'll do a little D-Hop draft next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
So DeAndre Hopkins, we'll see where he's going to land for this upcoming season. As he is, did he officially get released yet, Hickey? Because I read some article over the weekend that he wasn't officially released, and that still opens up the slim door that maybe a trade does get done. But I thought that was supposed to be finalized today, but I haven't seen anything on that. So I guess it's semantics at this point. If they have not been able to find the deal yet, even though we've seen that scenario before, when you have a player that is oh so close to getting released, they put that out there. The next thing you know, you get some garbage pick associated with it and you find a way to work out the financials, then that could be a way that does go down. But I'm going to assume that he's going to be a free agent. And did that become official at some point today?
4 hours ago, officially official.
So there you go. So we had the inevitable with DeAndre Hopkins that he was officially released today. But I did laugh over the weekend. I think it was Mike Florio who pointed this out. Everyone said it was official on Friday. Well, it didn't pop up on however the NFL does that, and there's still a very slim chance that maybe he gets traded. But now that is out the window with that becoming official today. So let's get a little NFL music and let's draft the potential destinations for DeAndre Hopkins on where he will land up. I'll go with the first pick here, Hickey. So nice of you to offer up the first pick and have me go here first right out of the gate. I will take the Kansas City Chiefs. I think that gives you the best of all worlds. I don't know what the contract will be. And could other teams maybe offer you a little bit more? Sure. But you have Mahomes. You have your best chance to win a Super Bowl. And I'm sure you can make the financials work on a one-year deal for DeAndre Hopkins. So I will take the Kansas City Chiefs.
I guess this is a little bit of a risk with my first pick, but I'll go with the Bills. They've been a team that their name's been thrown around for a lot of different free agents. Now, they did go after Von Miller, so maybe this is kind of in the same class, a little less money, but they have not really made a ton of aggressive kind of finishing piece moves the last two or three years, but this makes too much sense. Too much sense. I'll go with the Bills.
You just think it's a risk more so because of all the Christian McCaffrey stuff?
Well, I mean, I feel like we're talking about the Bills as like a landing spot for a ton of different players recently that are released, that are on the trade market, that and relatively decent, you know, cheap draft capital.
Got Von Miller last year.
That they don't kind of go all in for yet. Brandon Bean last year saying this is not a Super Bowl or bust year. He's kind of building the team with an eye for longevity and sustainability. Not that this is going to cripple the cap or anything, yeah. But... it just makes too much sense
that
for Buffalo
Brandon
to do it.
That Brandon Bean comment saying it's not Super Bowl or bust is very similar to Giannis Antetokounmpo saying that this season wasn't a failure for the Milwaukee Bucks. We all know that last year was Super Bowl or bust for the Buffalo Bills, and we all know that this past year for the Milwaukee Bucks was a failure. There's just certain words that players or executives don't like to say. Championship or bust is one that executives very rarely use. And for a player, they usually don't like to admit when there is a failure. I will say, though, that was Jaylen Brown's best moment from Game 7 when he admitted last night that this season was a failure. Because if he tried to spin this into saying, oh, there's no failures in the NBA and pulled the Giannis, man, that would have been the end of Jaylen Brown's career in Boston. Because those fans would not put up with that. So I take the Chiefs. You take the Bills. We're going to do 5 picks each. My next selection... Lamar pushed for Odell Beckham. The Ravens got Odell Beckham. Lamar, for weeks, has been pushing for DeAndre Hopkins. Would not surprise me if Lamar gets his way in this quote-unquote new era of the Baltimore Ravens when they actually start to put some bodies in the wide receiving room that you could talk yourself into. Hopkins would be the best wide receiver that Lamar has ever played with. And we know... they do have a phenomenal tight end in Mark Andrews. Could be a little bit of a crowded wide receiver room, though, because they did draft Zay Flowers as well, and they're still believing in Rashad Bateman, who unfortunately just has not put it all together coming out of Minnesota and winding up with the Baltimore Ravens as a first-round draft pick. But I'll go with the Ravens here.
I'll go with a team then whose connection with the quarterback is very strong between him and DeAndre Hopkins, the Cleveland Browns. Him and Deshaun Watson had a really good thing going before that did break up in Houston. Obviously, now we have Deshaun Watson advocating for the Browns to get Hopkins. I think it'd be a good landing spot where he could come in there, be the number one wide receiver, be on a competitive team, and make a playoff push of the Browns. I will go with the Cleveland Browns, my number two overall pick.
Next one. It's ironic here. The man that's responsible for breaking up DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson could end up getting DeAndre Hopkins back. And I'm going to go with Billy O'Brien with the New England Patriots. And let me just say this for you, Hickey. If Bill Belichick still has his magic touch, he will find a way to get DeAndre Hopkins. Because if there's ever been anything so Patriot-like, it would be showing interest in a player, not trading anything with this old team. He gets released. You get him on a one-year deal. And then you get, finally, Mac Jones, a number one wide receiver. Now, I don't think the appeal is still there with New England. I still think a lot of people in the league has respect, clearly, for Bill Belichick, but there's no Tom Brady there. But if you want to be a number one wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, and that's oh so important to you, New England does have a void in the number one wide receiving department on their depth chart. The difficult part there is just, where's that relationship at with Bill O'Brien and DeAndre Hopkins? And that's one, there's been a lot reported, a lot of ugliness, and I don't know if DeAndre Hopkins, who had that facial expression interview with Bryant McFadden, didn't really look like he was all that interested in New England, but it was just a video. I'll go with the Pats.
I'll say in the AFC East then. I'll go with the Jets. They're in on Odell Beckham Jr. reportedly. I think if you are Hopkins and at least you talk about wanting to win and playing with a good quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, Jets are right now built, you know, to try to make a deep run in the playoffs. You wouldn't be the, you know, at least you wouldn't get a lion's share of the targets because there's a lot of mouths to feed there in New York. But again, you would get a lot of attention and you would definitely be a welcomed resource play with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. I'll go New York.
I think this answer is going to surprise you. I'm actually going to stay in the Big Apple. I'm going to go with the Giants here. The Giants last year brought in Isaiah Hodgins. No one knew who the heck he was outside of Joe Shane because of their connection with Buffalo. And he put up productive numbers. Now, I don't know what Daniel Jones is still going to be as a franchise quarterback. He showed you he could be competent last year and good. But that wide receiving core right now is Isaiah Hodgins, Jalen Hyatt, Darius Slayton, and Paris Campbell. And you have Darren Waller as a tight end. And we'll see what happens with the health of Wandale Robinson and Sterling Shepard. That's a team that could use a number one wide receiver. DeAndre Hopkins is still that. So I'll take Big Blue with the Giants.
I'll stay in the NFC East. Let's go for a team that likes the glitz, likes the glam, likes the headlines, loves their quarterback in Dak Prescott. Maybe get him an extra weapon or two. I'll go with the Cowboys.
Which that would then be a crowded wide receiving room.
It would. It would.
Because you have CeeDee Lamb, who's close to being a top 10 wide receiver in the league. Like, I wouldn't say he's top 10 right now, but you can make the case for it. And then they just brought in Brandon Cooks, and you have Michael Gallup as well. So, I understand from a drama standpoint where you're going, and it would improve the wide receiving room, but would DeAndre Hopkins view that as an attractive destination with how many mouths they're already being fed in that organization? Finally, whew, my fifth and final pick here. I'm going to save a team for you, and I want to see if you're going to pick that team. I have two teams potentially that I just wonder if you're going to pick them.
I already have my team, and I bet you it's neither team you're thinking.
AFC or NFC?
AFC.
My team is an AFC team as well.
All right, we'll see. Let's hear it.
I'm going to go with the team that you could argue has a crowded wide receiver room. But if they really want to leave no stone unturned with their young quarterback, they would do this. I'll go with the Pittsburgh Steelers as a dark horse team. Now, they have Pickens, who I think is going to be a stud. You still have Deontay Johnson. But I don't love Deontay Johnson, and they just brought in Allen Robinson. I'll go Pittsburgh there. Get in the AFC North kind of party where everyone's saying maybe the Browns show interest. Maybe the Ravens show interest. What about the Steelers just sitting there, lying and waiting to make a deal potentially?
I like it. I like it. It seems like Hopkins is trying to play with a good quarterback, go to a team that's right now stable, have a good defense. This last team has a good, young, up-and-coming quarterback a lot of people are believing in. They are a team right now with a very good head coach. They're a team that had a lot of promise last year, looked to build on it, and their wide receiving room is interesting. Interesting whether he could still go in there, despite there being some names, come in and still be the number one wide receiver and make a good presence.
Is this a team that torments you?
Yes.
Team that your team can't beat?
In certain places.
Yes. So you're saying Jacksonville?
Jacksonville Jaguars.
Now you have Calvin Ridley, and you have Christian Kirk.
Ridley coming off a year suspension. Can he get back to that, you know,
he's
top
a star.
End form?
Just don't gamble. You're a star.
It's a question.
And Zay Jones had a monster year. And Evan Ingram's back, who had a good year, too, as a tight end. That would be a fun one. And they drafted our pal Brenton's, Strange.
Brenton Strange.
Who I like. That would be fun. That would be a good one. An ATN coming out of the backfield.
Hopkins wants to win. You can win in Jacksonville.
Now, the two teams that I thought you were going to maybe go with, I thought you would consider the Detroit Lions, and then I also thought you would consider, Hickey, the Carolina Panthers, since you're such a big Bryce Young fan.
I just don't think he would go to a place with a rookie quarterback. If anything, the one team I wish I kind of maybe did pick looking back and didn't, Denver Broncos. I think he would play for Sean Payton, and I think he would believe in Russ with the wide receiving room that definitely can improve.
You know what's funny? I actually did think of Denver. The only thing, they didn't trade Jerry Jeudy. And I think Jerry Jeudy is so overrated. Now, I know they love Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick. Those guys got to be healthy.
Denver, which is an issue.
Denver would be a good one. And you look at that, just that division. Chiefs are better. Chargers are better. Denver's playing for third place, it feels like, this year. Now, can you narrow that gap between you and the Chargers? You look at Hopkins. It's only a positive, in my opinion.
And not that I think he would be like this player, but Sean Payton did show you he can get Michael Thomas a lot of attention and a lot of receptions. And, you know, if you're DeAndre Hopkins, again, you're not going to get that volume and catch 150 passes. No. But Sean Payton showed you, if he trusts you, he'll absolutely draw plays and make sure you get the ball.
It's kind of funny to say this, but I don't think people realized how good DeAndre Hopkins was last year. He missed the first six games, and he didn't play towards the end of the season, too. In nine games, just nine games, he had 64 receptions, 717 yards, and three touchdowns. Playing with a not-so-good quarterback. That's impressive. In nine games to put up 717 yards and three touchdowns in an offense that was just brutal last year. So I elected to go Kansas City, Ravens, Pats, Giants, Steelers. Hickey goes to the Bills, Browns, Jets, Cowboys, and Jaguars. We'll come on back. We'll tell you whose stock is booming, whose stock is dooming. But first up, with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, wearing a very nice green shirt, if I may say so myself.
Thank you.
You have more fashion already than Hickey, who usually claims to be a fashionable person. But I think today, Hickster, Emmanuel Babari, he has outdone you in the shirt department.
I'm not one to toot my own horn, and I like the shirt, Emmanuel. I like mine better.
Personal. I think yours is better, and the Thank amount you. Of thought I put into putting this on is embarrassing. I appreciate the compliment.
Do me a favor. Can you just like stop being so humble all the time? Like, tell Hickey, hey, you look like a slob. Shut up and actually come to work a little bit better.
I like this shirt.
All right, Hickey, you look like a slob. Shut up. Come to work looking better.
Don't be bullied by Zach. Have your own thoughts.
Emmanuel's my guy. I like Emmanuel. I don't really change up my wardrobe either. I'm just wearing a black T-shirt today. But Hickey, you wear like the same five things all throughout. I'm actually excited that we're starting to turn to summer because now Hickey will actually change up the wardrobe a little bit instead of wearing the same five shirts that he wears each and every week.
Yeah, I saw a few shirts lying around. This one was at the top.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thought process here.
His focuses are in other places. That's why he's a big superstar filling on the Yankees radio network pre and post as well, Emmanuel Babari. And I'm not just saying that because we share the same agent. That was a genuine comment that I did have.
I appreciate that.
I was listening to you a few weeks ago on an overnight on the Fan, and then also pre and post for the Yankees Radio Network. You have a very pre and post type of voice, like network feel pre and post, where I feel like you have to have a certain voice for pre and post, and you can't be crazy like me, like freaking out all the time and then getting too down in the dumps because you have to represent the team. I thought you did a very good job keeping the train from running off the tracks.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like you got to be straightforward.
Yeah.
You can have a certain amount of energy. You can't have too much energy. So I'm trying to walk that line. So thank you for noticing.
Wow. So real quickly, Brandon Nimmo and Nick Castellanos, I don't know no one cares about my fantasy team, are both on my fantasy team. Nimmo robbed Castellanos tonight of a home run.
Right.
And then Castellanos robbed Nimmo of a hit as well.
That's ridiculous.
These guys got to get on the same page.
Your fantasy team's conspiring against each other.
It's not good. There's going to be problems in the clubhouse. Yeah. We're going to have Castellanos and Nimmo get into a fight afterwards.
Might need to dangle one of them in a trade soon.
Hey, the trade market is open. We're wheeling and dealing right now.
Break them up from each other.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. Another day is in the books, and we're taking stock of the sports world. It's time to find out who's up and who's down. Let's end the day right and hit the closing bell. Only on the Zach Gelb Show.
The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Heat center Bam Adebayo was very solid on the defensive end of the floor in Game 7, grabbing 10 rebounds and recording one block as Miami defeated the Celtics 103-84. The 84 points were the lowest point total of the season for Boston as they finished Game 7 shooting a dreadful 9 of 42 from 3. Give a stock up to Bam Adebayo. Staying in that Game 7, have to give a stock up, even though NBA on TNT didn't want any part of him in the post-game trophy presentation. 2-1, Caleb Martin, who was absolutely sensational. I thought he was the Heat's best player last night. A very efficient 11 of 16 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3, had 26 points and 10 rebounds. Give Caleb Martin a stock up. We'll keep things moving. Nick Nurse is the new head basketball coach for the Philadelphia 1-2-3-4-5-6ers, 10-9-8-76ers. Hickey, I look at this as good news for the Sixers in terms of I like the coach that they did hire, but I still don't trust Daryl Morey to turn this roster around. I do believe in the year of 2023, Nick Nurse is a better coach than Doc Rivers, but is James Harden going to be back? And if he isn't back, who are you bringing in to replace him? So I think it's good news for the Sixers, but I still don't feel good about them in terms of where the heck are they going to go. But you look at what the Raptors have done throughout the last few years. They have won with less, where if you put Nick Nurse on that team with the Sixers the last few years, I don't know how it pans out, but I'd rather have Nick Nurse than Doc Rivers to make that a stock up. Eric Spoelstra. I thought the conversation regarding Eric Spoelstra would have been fascinating if he would have lost last night. Because for years, people didn't want to call him great because he won with LeBron and Dwayne Wade. And the last few years, people started to understand how great of a coach this guy is. But if he would have blown a 3-0 lead with only needing one more win and to be the first coach in NBA history to blow a 3-0 lead, I think there would have been a ton of criticism for Eric Spoelstra and people would have wondered how great he actually is. Instead, he's going to now, that's his 6th NBA Finals as a head coach. Give Eric Spoelstra a stock up. Well, we have our NBA Finals set. That will get underway on Thursday between Denver and the Miami Heat in Denver. We do have our Stanley Cup Finals set as well, as the Florida Panthers have been in for a long time after sweeping the Carolina Hurricanes. Vegas was up 3-0 against the Dallas Stars, then lost Game 4 and Game 5, set up a pivotal Game 6 last night in Dallas, and it was a party for the Vegas Knights, the Golden Knights. Let's hear William Karlsson score his second goal of the game. This made it 5-0 in the third period. Here's the Golden Knights Radio Network.
And a steal in the neutral zone. Mike Amadio works in. Right circle. Tap back. Score! Karlsson! The steal and the strike. Amadio to Karlsson. He's got two today. 5-0 Golden Knights. 2 minutes into the third period.
And the Golden Knights end up punching another ticket to the Stanley Cup Final. They win that series 4-2. And they defeated the Stars 6-0 in Dallas's home arena. And the Knights have been around, the Golden Knights have been around for 6 years. They've been to the Final Four in the sport 4 times. Because I have to say it that way, because one of those years, it was the semifinal with his realignment in the COVID season. And then they have been to now, this will be their 2nd Stanley Cup Final. That's just insane, first 6 years in the NHL. So give a stock up to the Golden Knights. Got to give a stock down to Jaylen Brown. He was absolutely horrible in Game 7. Tatum rolls the ankle, and you needed Brown to step up, and he was just dreadful in the contest. 8 turnovers, could do nothing when he had to dribble to the left, and could not hit water if he fell out of a boat from 3. You look back at his performance last night, he's 1 of 9 from 3 and 8 of 23 from the field. He's minus 17 in the game. You need Jaylen Brown to rise up. He did the opposite last night. Give a stock down to Jaylen Brown. Reggie Miller, all throughout the game, he's advocating for Caleb Martin to win the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. After the game, he found out 9 people have votes. He's one of them. He ends up voting for Jimmy Butler. That makes no sense to me when you spent almost the entire game asking the question, is he playing himself into the conference finals MVP? You saw a tremendous performance from Caleb Martin in a great series, so I don't get why Reggie Miller, when he made such a big stink out of that, wouldn't end up voting for Caleb Martin. Give a stock down to Reggie Miller. And finally, Bob Myers feels like it was just time to move on. Well, yeah, you felt like it was time because you didn't have the heart to end up telling guys that you're very close with in either Draymond Green or Klay Thompson that they have to move on from you if the Golden State Warriors want to continue their championship window. I get those conversations are tough, especially when you've seen these guys grow up in their professional lives and you've won four championships with them. But let's not make no mistake about this. The reason why Bob Myers is walking away as the president and GM of the Golden State Warriors is he didn't have it in him to just be honest with Draymond or Klay Thompson to try to find that next great piece for for Steph Curry to continue to maximize the championship window of Steph Curry. So a great career in Golden State for Bob Myers, a dynastic one, but I don't like the explanation today. And I don't like how he wasn't truthful, so give a stock down to Bob Myers. And that's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll be back tomorrow on a very busy Wednesday edition of the show. Big thanks to Abby Chin today, each and every one of you, for listening and participating in our radio program. And big thanks to Hot Take Hickey as well for producing this extravaganza. I'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 Pacific. Scott Hastings will join us as we'll preview the NBA Finals that get underway on Thursday night. We out. Bye-bye.
Peace!